Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Thursday, April 17th, 2014. It's just after 2 UTC. I'm Sam Minter and Yvonne Bo is here yet again. Hello, Yvonne.
Hello.
And I don't know. We're going to basically do Yvonne's list today because I got here and I sat down to do this and I'm like, I got Jack. I don't know where my head has been, where I've been doing this last week, but like I thought about the last week and I'm like, nothing's going on. You know, yes, there's stuff going on in various parts of the world. There's things here, but I'm like, there's nothing in particular that is new that we haven't talked about before that I have anything new to add about. And so I wrote down a list, but it was fairly lame. Yvonne had a better list, so we're going with Yvonne's list this week. And so we have on our agenda today. Last week we said we would come back to the whole issue with Mozilla's CEO and sort of the whole backlash of there's been a whole talk about how in numerous areas where sort of the liberal view has quote unquote won, that they're, taking it out on anybody who has opposite views, and specifically in the gay marriage area, but in others too. We'll talk about that. We haven't talked about Ukraine in a couple weeks, and things have kept happening there, so maybe we'll talk about Ukraine a little bit. And Yvonne pointed out that Google released earnings, and they were disappointing, and there's stuff to talk about that, and including, all kinds of stuff. It'll give Yvonne his usual chance to rant about Google. And also a thing that's been sort of percolating the few months, really, but it's come up a few times in the last few weeks, is this whole thing where there are protests going on in San Francisco about how the tech folks that are coming into the area are ruining San Francisco and how people want them to leave, I guess. I don't know. Anyway, I don't have dice ready this time, Yvonne. So where do you want to go first?
Oh, boy, you don't have dice ready. Okay, based on what random thing that I just did, let's see. Let's start with last week's leftover topic.
Okay.
What's happening? Nothing's coming.
You used up all the ribbon.
No, I didn't.
Yes, so... Alex is here. He's on top of my bookshelf, as he sometimes is during the podcast. My wife had dental work, so she's like basically incapacitated elsewhere.
She's out of commission.
And so he grabbed my label maker and printed out about 20 feet worth of labels of just whatever he happened to have typed. And remember, he can't spell.
Well,
he can spell a few words. He can spell his name. He can spell mommy. He can spell a few things, but in general, he just typed stuff. And beep, beep, beep. You'll notice at that point that there's a change in the sound quality. That's because my son unplugged my microphone. It kept recording. It just reverted to the internal mic on the computer until I noticed later and undid it. But that's what's going on. Nobody cares. Do do do, but oh, hold on. What just happened there, Alex?
This is not going well.
Yeah. Okay. That's enough. Are you going to be good? Are you going to keep us from doing this entirely? Because I need you to be good. What can I do for you? Can I put on some show for you? Can I drug you and put you to sleep for the evening?
Can we bribe you, for God's sakes?
Anyway, and our new schedule doesn't allow us any alternate times. Alex, okay. I need the microphone. Okay, that's good. Yucky, yeah. Okay. Anyway.
Where were we?
Alex? Alex, you're being very bad. Here. Can you play a game on the iPad? Or video? Here, play your train game. Alex, play. Okay. We're going to try this. We may fail utterly. And I apologize in advance if we fail utterly. So, the situation that got all of the attention this last couple weeks was Mozilla, which is the nonprofit organization that runs the Firefox browser, appointed a new CEO. The guy they appointed, what is his name? Brendan Eichs?
I can't remember the guy's name.
Anyway, he had a long history. He'd worked with the company basically. A long time. He was the inventor of JavaScript.
Yep.
He got appointed CEO, and someone pointed out, because all of these things are public records when you donate political money, that he had donated $1,000 to the campaign against the amendment. And this was all confusing, but basically, it was against gay marriage in California. There was a whole history of back and forth in California on what went on. But he donated money to a campaign against gay marriage.
It was a proposition, I believe, that if I remember correctly, that was on the ballot in order to basically ban. Yes.
Yeah, so the end result of it, regardless of the very complicated history in California, was it would make gay marriage illegal in California.
Correct.
That campaign was known as one that was particularly, not like most campaigns aren't, but a particularly vicious campaign.
Beep, beep, beep. And here's where I realized the microphone was unplugged and plugged it back in again, so the sound will go back, and again, nobody cares. Beep, beep, beep. Just realized something. Anyway, particularly vicious campaign used a lot of sort of homophobic stereotypes in the ads and everything to push things forward. In any case, when this became public, a campaign started happening to get him to resign. There were petitions and all this kind of stuff, but it sort of hit the fan when OkCupid, a dating site, decided to actually change their website. So if you came there with a Firefox browser, you got a message about how they would really prefer you didn't use Firefox because the CEO had these views. And a couple days later, he held on for a little while, and he made a number of statements basically talking about how Mozilla was an inclusive organization. He would fully support those policies. He would not be changing anything in those regards. That basically he said, let me prove myself that I'm an open and inclusive person and I'm not going to be discriminatory, et cetera, et cetera. When all this shit hit the fan, eventually he resigned. And there's been a lot of back and forth in terms of, is the kind of hounding that people did that resulted in his resignation appropriate? And specifically for the gay rights movement, are they essentially being sore winners? And I've seen a lot of conversation even before this over the last few months with people on the social conservative side of things being concerned that, hey, it's clear the folks advocating gay marriage have won. Those people who are against gay marriage are on the losing side of this battle. And the fear that they would become marginalized and stigmatized as, in the same way that people who, in the same way that racists were, where, in the 50s and 60s, there were huge swaths of this country where one could be openly racist and that was just fine. Whereas, you know, a few decades...
It's just not acceptable anymore.
A few decades later, it's not only not acceptable, but, like, if you admit to holding those views...
You're going to be ostracized.
You're going to be ostracized. And so the question that these social conservatives were saying is, hey, okay, we lost this argument, but can't I still hold my beliefs and not feel that my position in society and my job and everything else is at risk?
You know, I was debating about this a little bit because I felt a little bit of a twinge when I heard that he resigned. Not because I am against gay marriage. I'm totally for it. Mm-hmm. Okay, all right. We've had this discussion before. But just in the whole way that it went down. But then I was thinking about it a little bit.
Yep.
And I realized that, yeah, it's just as unacceptable as calling somebody a nigger, as, you know, being a blatant racist. And that a person like that should not be CEO of a major corporation. So, especially a nonprofit foundation, which is dedicated to, you know, basically, you know, helping have a more open internet.
See, now
I just don't see an appropriate place for it. And by the way, I changed on this view. At first I thought, you know, but then I thought about it and I'm realizing, you know, I have gay friends. I have, you know, my wife's brother is gay. And I realized, I'm like, how the hell could I live in a society where, you know, some of my people close are like that? And I think the biggest mistake, look, you can have a political view, okay? But the one thing is, you see, where he made a massive mistake, in my opinion, is, you know, I've seen many CEOs will donate money to Republican Party, donate money to Democratic Party, and other things, etc. But most CEOs, unless they are, you know, the prime stockholders of the company, okay, all right, do not go out and talk about their specific political views.
Well, he didn't. He didn't.
He did. He fucking donated money to that specific campaign.
There's a difference.
He expressed his view that way.
There are a couple things. He expressed his view. He wasn't going out making speeches about it or anything.
But you know,
he did give the money, and as we know, money is speech. You know, you mentioned CEOs don't do this. At the time he did this, being the CEO probably wasn't even in his mind.
The problem is that doing that when you were an executive at a company opens you to that.
Was he even an executive back then?
Yes, he was.
Okay. But look, here. I have a couple things. One, I think that in the position he was in, you know, he had to resign. I think that I disagree with you, however, that holding these kinds of views should be an automatic disqualification of for these kinds of positions at all. I think that the anti-gay marriage position is still one held by close to 50% of the population of this country.
Actually, I think the latest poll showed it was less. It's already dropped.
Dropping. It's been dropping quickly, but it only recently passed 50%. Maybe it's at 40% now. But
yeah, last poll I looked at, it was in the 40.
In any case, my point is, it's not like this is a tiny sliver of the population. This is a significant part of the population believes this.
I get that, but my point is that if you go back 50 years ago, I bet you the fucking thing about being racist and shit or whatever was in the same way. Which is why originally I had the point of view that you're saying, and then I thought about it I realized no, it can't be. I can't have that view. I'm telling you, it was like my debate.
What about the next thing along the lines? Like, let's say 30 years from now, people view eating meat the same way that we're talking about being racist or well, right. And my point is, like, look, there's Alex, shush. There's, you know, morality changes and people's views of it change over time. And, you know, 50 years from now, it may be seen completely socially unacceptable to not be a vegetarian, for instance. And should everybody be that ever believed otherwise be held responsible for that forever? And here's the thing. He is, from everything that I've read about the man, aside from the marriage issue, he's not anti-gay. Yeah, he was one of the, he was one of that large group of people.
But the problem
who said
is he thought
civil unions were fine. He thought there should not be discrimination against gay people. He thought that there was blah blah blah. And the only thing he was saying and holding out on was marriages between a man and a woman. And the opinion on that has changed very rapidly. You and I have always thought that that was silly and it should be whoever the hell wants to get married should get married. But it's not, I think it's unfair, like, to, like, it may be an entirely different thing 30 or 40 years ago, but, you know, for an opinion that was a majority opinion in this country as little as a couple years ago, to suddenly be saying, well, that's now a completely socially unacceptable.
Let me just say this. I think that the thing about the donation was known before he was elected CEO.
Well, you know, the board may have made a bad decision.
Exactly. The problem is the board made a bad decision.
Well, and I don't think they looked into this.
Knowing that, the board should have known that that made him not qualified to be elected CEO of that organization.
Let's take a Mozilla in specifically, because I think the issue is entirely different depending on, I mean, like, as you know, like, if you're talking about Chick-fil-A or something, they have the entirely opposite viewpoint, and
right.
It's probably completely appropriate at that company to hold these kinds of views.
Right.
But Mozilla specifically comes from a culture that very much was on the other side of this issue, going more so every day.
Exactly.
So, you know, within the, certainly the, I mean, and it's hard to say. It's like, they only had a few actual employees, then a volunteer culture around that, and then the users. You know, so it's not quite the same as a for-profit company. But yeah, there are all kinds of interests here that they probably could have predicted would be upset if this became a big issue. But I think everybody was sort of bowled over by the fact that it even became an issue. And surprised by it.
I don't understand why. I'm sorry, but then there were idiotic, naive idiots. I'm shocked. I mean, I'm sorry, but you know, when you're vetting somebody to be CEO, those are the kinds of things that are the issues, especially if you're talking about, like I said, a place that the whole raison d'etre is to be inclusive, to be open, to provide, you know, something for society that you cannot. He made a mistake, and I'm not saying he shouldn't have worked at the company, but it just didn't make him qualified to be leading the company.
And I think that's one distinction a lot of people have made here is, you know, it's one thing to be persecuted at a company for your views. It's another thing if you're sort of the public face of the company.
Exactly. And that's the problem.
But I think, you know, and flipping to the other side of this a little bit, Andrew Sullivan has gone on a few rants on this. For anyone who doesn't know, he was one of the first biggest advocates for the gay marriage movement, pushing it at a time when even the rest of the gay rights community thought that was crazy and not something that should be pushed. He was majorly involved in that whole initiative for, you know, decades, long before it became even close to reality. His argument basically here is this is draconian overreach, where the people in the gay movement who are pushing for this kind of essentially retribution against people on the other side are sort of, and this comes back to the sore winners, where his view is, if you do this kind of thing, if you start saying anybody who ever held the opposite view is anathema, then you're going to result in an even bigger backlash where you're winning. You're winning the argument. You're convincing people. People are coming around to your point of view very, very rapidly. Why would you go and fuck that up by then going and having a vendetta against people who once held the opposite view? There, you know, people are coming around anyway. that can only be counterproductive. And I think I actually agree with his argument a lot. Whether or not you're actually right that, you know, hey, you know, it wasn't a good idea for Mozilla to hire him, that he's not in line with the people that that organization is most associated with, and it would cause friction, blah, blah, blah. Even if you're right about all that, the fact that there was an organized push to cause a big deal about this, I think ends up being counterproductive for the folks whose agenda is, you know, normalizing homosexual, undoing the stigma and normalizing that for in all of society. You do is you end up making this an even bigger red blue issue than it was. You rile people up who are on the other side, whereas, you know, they were coming around to the fact that, oh crap, well, we lost and we have to get used to it. But if you start persecuting them over the fact that they believe these things, then you end up causing even more of a backlash.
But I think you cannot. Okay, he wasn't being persecuted before he can't be CEO. Okay, no. It wasn't like there was a campaign against the guy when he was an executive at Mozilla.
No, there was not.
This had to do with the fact that I think you got to differentiate between the mistake that the board did by appointing somebody with a position that he had to be the CEO of the company versus persecuting somebody who's an employee just because he holds a different view. And those are two very different things. Okay. And that's why I don't really agree with his point. I think that when you name somebody to that position, I think that there are higher expectations and he really didn't meet them. And I think that was the mistake.
Isn't there an argument to be made for what he said of like, look, let me prove myself. Let me prove that this one donation, however many years in the past, is not representative of who I am or what I believe.
I think he had to fall on his sword because he had to go and like, because he had to basically cover up for the fact that the board shouldn't have named them in the first place.
Well, and I think, like, honestly, like, whether or not it was, you know, I think the issue here is, should the people who made an issue of this have made an issue of this is an open question. I think they shouldn't have. I think it was a bad move on their part. However, once the issue was made, I think he had no choice. I mean, once you had a major website, you know.
I mean, but it wasn't just that. Even quite a many employees at Mozilla that didn't know that he had done that.
Right.
Okay. Were aghast at it and were asking for a resignation. This wasn't just an external campaign.
Well, yeah. I mean, it was an external campaign which infected internal. But again, like there's like 10 employees that are actually employees of the Mozilla company.
I get that, I think it's a little bit more than
I'm
that.
I'm exaggerating slightly. But.
Yeah, but I mean, there's a number of employees. No, there's more than that. But I'll tell you that, I mean, it wasn't just external. The people that internally, because I guess a lot of them didn't know that he had done this, were just appalled. And I think that the board should have expected them to be.
So
I, you know, it's just one of those things that, you know, like I said, probably would have been okay if he's named an executive, anything else and whatever, you know, whatever other position. I just think, you know, when you're vetting somebody to be the head of an organization, you have to go. It's a much higher standard. It really is. And he really didn't meet it. That's what I think. I originally thought, I was thinking the same track as Andrew Sullivan and you guys were for a little bit, but then I realized it's just not acceptable
at
that level.
Well, and again, I think you can make a case that it's not acceptable at Mozilla because of the nature of Mozilla. I don't think you can make a case that on an overall basis, it's just fundamentally acceptable. It's just too large a percentage.
Because of the nature of how Mozilla is, that's where it's just not acceptable.
So let's talk Dropbox.
Mm-hmm.
So Dropbox, appointed Condoleezza Rice to their board. And there has been a move growing there as well. It hasn't blown up like the Mozilla one has yet. I don't know whether it will or not. But there have been a number of people saying that organizing campaigns to get off of Dropbox, to boycott Dropbox in various ways, to transition to other things, because they view this as... depending on who you're talking to, either, look, she's a war criminal, and why would we want to do business with a company that supports and pays war criminals? Or just, hey, look, Dropbox is someplace that I want to keep my stuff safe and secure and blah, blah, blah. And this is someone who is an open advocate of, take everything that we've been talking about the NSA, wiretapping, et cetera. She supports every single bit of it. So why would you want somebody like that on a board of a company who's specifically about safeguarding data?
Well, it's a board member. It's not an executive. I really think people are going overboard on the whole Condi thing. I mean, I don't like Condoleezza, but I think they lost their marbles on this just because she got named to the board. I mean, I'm not dropping Dropbox.
Well,
use Dropbox.
I use Dropbox too. I'm probably not dropping it. No. But like it's not just, okay, does she have a decision-making power? We can talk about how much influence boards do or do not have in different situations, but
a lot of boards are
paying her a significant salary too.
They get the salary that any board members get. I mean, you get fees and you get some money and whatnot. I mean, it's not insignificant. I mean, but my point is that.
By the way, I will happily join any board. Anybody wants to pay me to be on a board.
Absolutely, so will I.
I'm on that.
I'm all over that.
No second guessing, no questions. I will happily join your board.
Yeah, I think this is a ridiculous overreaction. Okay, about her being named to a board.
See, I actually sympathize with this one even more than I sympathize with the Mozilla one, because the Mozilla one, I'm like, it's not directly related to the
business. She's not an executive.
No, I know she's not an executive.
It's a board.
It's an advisory role, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I know.
What the heck? I mean, she is not an executive of the company. I mean, you look at boards. I mean, for all the companies in Silicon Valley, there's a lot of people with political opinions and qualifications that a lot of people dislike. I mean, she isn't the only one. I mean, go look through them. I mean, there's plenty of people, for God's sakes. So I think that this is a significant overreaction. So.
Yeah, no, like I said, I actually see this one more because, like, to me, the Mozilla one is, like, his political views in that particular point didn't have a direct bearing on, running a browser. Whereas, to me, Condoleezza's viewpoints on a lot of the national security stuff do have a potential direct impact on what Dropbox does.
Dude, Larry Ellison went on TV and went and said that he's okay with everybody snooping on your shit. Okay, all right? You shouldn't expect it.
Well, you shouldn't hear all these fucking
people. I didn't hear all these fucking people like, going and asking for his resignation. John Chambers at freaking Cisco is a fucking Republican too. I don't see him getting chased out of office either. I'm sorry. Chambers backed Romney, for God's sakes. Okay?
It's not about backing a political party or candidates. I think it's about, are the views that you are advocating contradictory?
Romney, he's backing a lot of these fucking views that we're talking about.
No, I know. Is it contradictory to the mission of that company in particular?
What the fuck? Dropbox? What? I mean, what's the difference? I'm sorry. All our network traffic is...
Well, we know the network companies are all evil.
How much of the network traffic in the world goes through Cisco routers?
We know Cisco's evil. I think that's the difference. Like, we know Cisco's been in bed with these guys, and we're unhappy with it, and, you know, but we that's been a clear view. I think the difference here is Mozilla, as Dropbox has been perceived, now the perception may be incorrect, but has been perceived as one that has been taking a more privacy-focused stance than, say, Cisco or certainly the telecoms or whatever. No. I think that's the difference. I mean, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And, you know, and lots of people have been saying, you know, crap, Cisco is compromised. It would be nice if we couldn't use Cisco, but it's pretty hard not to use Cisco.
Right.
Same thing if you pick, like, you know, Verizon or AT&T or Level 3 or any of the big you know, backbone providers. It's not like you can just say, well,
I'm going to route my traffic around them.
Right. I mean, it's certainly not in something that individuals have the capability of doing. Like,
no.
You can't say, I'm going to use the internet, but I'm not going to let any of my traffic go over Level 3's wires.
Shit. I mean, look, I can't avoid AT&T. Listen, I got, a couple of years ago did a project. I got fiber running to all the buildings in our condo. Okay? All right? Dude, look, I can't avoid. Look, it's AT&T fiber coming through here. And, oh, by the way, it's frickin' Cisco Catalyst switches, okay, in the frickin' main place over here. I can't avoid this shit. I'm done. I'm out. Okay?
And you even know? If you encrypt your stuff, it's all been compromised anyway because exactly. The encryption has bugs in it that it can be exploited.
Right.
Well, which may or may not have intentionally been added. Now,
exactly.
Now the Heartbleed or whatever it was last. I've seen interviews with the person who introduced it, and he's like, "No, I just fucked up."
Well, there you have it.
But of course, you could always have people saying, "Well, of course he'd say that." But anyway, yeah, I don't know. I think the issue here is not necessarily like I want to retain the idea of. It's okay to disagree. Like, just because somebody's on the losing end of an argument doesn't mean they're immediately obviously evil. I think, you know, I did...
Which I am not saying that Brandon... But here's the thing. You gotta confuse... I'm not saying Brandon Icke is evil.
You're just saying he's not appropriate for that job, given...
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't have fired him. I wouldn't have done anything. But you know what? You can't name him a leader of an organization because of that. That's my point. I mean, it would be... I mean... It's just, yeah, no, I can't do it. Sorry. You know, that's just my thing.
I mean, I see your point, but again, I don't think the issue that is interesting to me is not once all this happened, should he have resigned? It's not should Mozilla have appointed him? It's was it a politically prudent thing to do for the people who went after him to actually go after him? As opposed to saying, you know, bygones, we're not going to worry about this unless he starts doing something on the job that's a problem.
I don't know. I don't agree with that. Anyway.
Okay, let's take a break. We will be back after this exciting whatever it'll be. Here we are again.
Well, let's stick with the valley. Let's go with the buses and the protest of the thing.
Okay. So you know, I will start out with my own bus stories. because I mentioned a few times on Twitter off and on, I have been occasionally taking the bus into work. And I had been reluctant to do this at first, like, yeah, at first for the longest time, I was like, look, there's one bus, it's like a park and ride I have to drive to, and the last bus goes at like 7 a.m., and so maybe it'll, and I did it a couple times when I had to be into work for 8 a.m. meetings or something, but for the most part, I was like, it's too restrictive, and I have to, like, leave at certain times, too, so I can't, I lose all my flexibility.
Right.
And then I found one that had that same annoying schedule, only mornings and afternoons, but was walking distance from my house. So I did that a little bit more often, but it was still, like, I could only do it on days where my work and personal schedule exactly matched when the buses were running.
Right.
So more recently, just a few months ago, I discovered yet another park and ride. And you know, you guys blame me, like, I wasn't very good, apparently, at researching all the available bus choices for me. Otherwise, I would have found all of this earlier. But I found yet another park and ride where the buses do run all day long.
Oh.
So I've been trying that out. It's practically 24 hours. I could take a bus back and forth from this park and ride a couple miles from my home in Everett, Washington, down to Seattle.
Okay. How's the time that it takes on the bus versus you driving?
Well, look, here's the thing. If you do total time, like the time I leave my front door,
yeah,
to the time I arrive at work, including the time it takes to drive to the park and ride, the time it takes to wait for the bus, the time it takes to walk from the bus station at the other end, it takes just as long or longer as it takes to drive. However, the difference is... I'm not driving. I can read. I can potentially sleep.
Yeah,
I can do all kinds of stuff. So I was like, you know, this I could deal with this. Like, I could deal with, you know, it gives me potentially an extra 40, 50 minutes. Like, the actual time on the highway is less, actually, because they can take the HOV lane and blah, blah, blah. But the total time is still just as long when you add on all those other things.
Right.
But, you know, I'm like, I could try this. I this would be cool. So I've been trying it a few times. A few things I discovered. When I'm going later in the day, like when I don't have that 8 a.m. meeting and I'm trying to get into work for like 10 o'clock or something, like 3/4 of the times I've tried, the park and ride has been completely full, so there's no place to park.
Oh, that's irritating.
So I've gotten there and I'm like, no place to park, and I'm like, I guess I'm driving. Now, of course, later in the day like that, traffic is less of an issue. Like, just to remind people who may not remember what my commute is like, if I go into work after the morning rush, like I'm leaving home at 9, I'm trying to get to work at 10 or 10:30 or something like that. It's like a 30, 35 minute drive to work. And it's not bad at all. If, on the other hand, I'm trying to get in for an 8 a.m. meeting, on a good day, it takes an hour. And if there is bad weather or accidents or anything else, it can easily be 90 minutes or more. And so in order to get to that 8 a.m. meeting and know I'm getting there reliably, if I'm driving, I have to leave home at 6:30 in the morning, which means I have to be up at 5 or 5:30 in the morning to get ready to leave, which I am not a morning person. If you left me to my own devices, I would barely ever get up before noon, let alone be at work before noon, let alone 8 a.m. Okay? I would work late into the night.
You and my wife are kindred spirits.
I would work late into the night, happily. But, so the bus, like, if I'm taking it at 10 o'clock anyway, or 9 o'clock, it doesn't make that much of a difference. It's not a big, yes, I get to read, but it's not an annoying commute. But those commutes where I have to leave at 6:30 in the morning and I'm in bumper to bumper traffic for 90 minutes or close to 90 minutes, those are really annoying. And I get to work and I'm already exhausted. I'm already done. You know, and I take the next couple hours recovering before I'm ready to be productive again. So like those, I want to commute. So like Okay, so if I'm coming in late, it's full. If I come in early, there's usually spaces. Like if I'm trying to get, I'm trying to catch like a bus between 6:30 and 7 to get me to that 8 o'clock meeting. I can usually find a parking space. If I'm not pushing right up to the edge of that time period, but the buses at that time period are also pretty full.
Right.
So like, I haven't had to stand yet, but one time I had to sit in, there were three seats and I had to sit in the middle seat between two large men. Okay.
This doesn't sound very.
And, you know, I don't care that they, you know, I don't care that they were men. I care that they were large.
Big.
You know, because basically I'm sitting here and I can't have my hands next to me. I have to have them scooched up in front of me.
Oh, boy.
Because there's not enough room.
It's just not comfortable, man.
It is not comfortable at all. And, you know, I'm sitting there all scooched. And I probably should have just stood up. But, you know, I sat there. I was like, this kind of sucks. Another time. And so let me tell you this morning. This morning, I took the bus again. And so here's my experience on the bus this morning. First of all, I get the last seat that's actually facing forward. And I was like, oh, good. I get a seat that's facing forward. I like that. And I got the last one. But the man sitting next to me reeked of tobacco smoke.
Oh.
Reeked. Like,
I hate that. You know, I know exactly what you're... Oh.
You know, so...
That's horrible.
Yeah. Ugh. So I'm like, okay, I can deal. I'm going to be on the bus like 45 minutes. I can deal. So I'm like, you know, and the smell started to fade or I started to get used to it.
Well, after now you like start getting minutes. Used to it. That's...
And then a woman about two or three seats in front of me started getting motion sick and throwing up.
Oh!
And so all the people around... So various people around her were like trying to give her napkins and some bags and some stuff to clean up and something to throw up into or whatever. And I'm like, oh, this is just lovely. This is just lovely. Remind me why I'm not driving. And then, you know, I looked over while this was happening and the bus is zooming by bumper to bumper, stopped traffic. And I'm like, okay, I guess that's why I'm doing this. But right. I don't like these trade-offs.
Well, it doesn't happen every time that way.
No, no, I know. I've taken the bus a few times, and this is the first time someone's thrown up.
I mean, you know, look, like a couple of times, there's a commuter train that goes from my house to Miami. Okay, yeah. All right, and I took that train every once in a while. You know, the only reason I usually I would take it like if I was traveling, I was going to the airport because it did arrive at the airport, and then I could go from there and take my flight. I stopped taking it. I haven't taken it in a while for two reasons. One was that. One day I used to do it when I took these long overnight flights.
Right.
Okay. So I'd been flying all night and I got to the station one night and I don't know what the heck happened. Bottom line is that the train wasn't running.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not leaving. And I had to sit there for 2 hours after having been on a plane for 10 hours. All right. Waiting for the damn train to go.
And you like never took the train.
And again. No, I can't. You know what? I want to save the environment. I want to be the responsible thing. But good Lord, after sitting on a plane for 10 hours, I can't stay here for two. Okay. Well,
and like when I worked on the East Coast, I would occasionally not every day. I didn't commute into, but I occasionally had to go into Manhattan for work. And I lived in New Jersey and I took the train. I happily took the train. It was not a bad experience.
Oh, that's great. Over there. But then this is the other thing that happened, which on another occasion, great, I took the train. Train left on time, clockwork. I mean, boom, boom, boom. Get home. So I'm calling my wife to pick me up because she dropped me off. Okay, right? Okay. Uh-huh. She's not picking up the phone. Call again. Not picking up the phone. Call again. She's not picking up the phone. She didn't answer the phone for an hour and a half. She was sleeping. So I had just come in, by the way, from a freaking overnight flight. I'm exhausted. I'm sitting over there. Thankfully, not at the train station because right across from there is a Starbucks. And I just went to them to grab a cup of coffee and stuff. So I'm sitting at Starbucks. But I had basically had to sit at Starbucks for 2 hours until my wife showed up. because she was like all blissfully asleep. And so I was, and that was the end of my train taken to the airport. Yeah. You know,
I mean, look, like I like the idea. Like, I don't particularly, and by the way, if I was at certain other companies in this area besides my own, they run their own private buses, and we're going to be talking about Google in San Francisco in just a minute. And that, from everything I've heard, you know, it's not like your public bus things. It's more like
it's like business class, man. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you got nice comfy seats. You got Wi-Fi. You got the whole thing. You got air conditioning. Blah blah blah.
Actually, the buses over here in the train have Wi-Fi, by the way.
Very nice. Yeah. But anyway, so that's a very different experience than the public buses. My overall take on this is I actually really like the idea of being able to take public transportation of some sort instead of driving myself. However, you know, this is of course not what public transportation is, but I still want like my own little private space. I don't want to be crowded. Like, I don't mind public transportation where, like, it's not completely jam-packed full. But if it's jam-packed full and you've got everybody around there and you have to take a sideways or a backwards seat and you don't have even room to move your elbows, and that's just not pleasant.
I mean, I get that. I mean, you want some space. Actually, I mean, in some of those trains you were talking about, commuter up in New York, they have, I remember in some of them, I believe they had different classes, you know, so you could take the cheaper one or you could pay a little extra and get some room.
There are things like that. And you could also actually take the Amtrak if you wanted even more space. There are more options there than there are most places.
Right.
but, you know, at the same time, I'm like, this is miserable, but, you know, actually doing that commute in my car
is miserable too.
And it's like draining me of energy on those days I have to do that. And right now, although occasionally it's canceled, I just got a note that tomorrow I don't have to do this, but right now, twice a week, I have those 8 a.m. meetings.
Mm-hmm.
And even more so, I'm usually leaving because I have commitments at home during the evening rush.
Right.
And it's even with...
it's draining. My God.
Yeah. Even with the guy who is, you know, reeking of tobacco smoke next to me, it's still less draining and than, you know, 90 plus minutes in bumper to bumper traffic.
I mean, I like
driving like on the open road. I don't like bumper to bumper traffic.
No, bumper to bumper sucks. I mean, look, the other day, Monday, I had a 9 a.m. meeting in Miami. Okay, all right. And Miami, even like without traffic, is 50 minutes, okay, to get here. But it was supposed to be on somewhere that was just an exit off the interstate that typically is not a big deal to get there. Okay, all right. Well, shit. It was, for whatever the hell reason, traffic was bumper to bumper for I don't know how many miles. It took me about an hour and a half, I mean, to get there. And I was just like, oh, God, like, you know, irritated. I got to the meeting right when it started. I actually thought I was going to get there a little earlier. Yeah, I would have appreciated being sitting on a train that would have whizzed me down there, but not having to deal with that bumper to bumper traffic.
And by the way, there is a train that potentially goes from Everett to Seattle as well, but I would have to drive a decent distance in the wrong direction first, and it has limited timetables just like those other buses. And I'd have a bigger distance to go once I got to Seattle to get back to work too. So
on the topic of the buses.
Let's actually, we've been going 15 minutes just on my buses and your trains. So let's take a break and then we'll hit San Francisco. We'll be back right after this.
AfricaFocus.org features high-quality analysis and progressive advocacy on African issues with a particular attention to priority issues affecting the entire continent. The heart of the website is the Africa Focus Bulletin. Other features include regularly updated Africa-related news feeds and a set of country pages with extensive background and links on each African country. If you follow African issues or are even curious, visit AfricaFocus.org today.
Okay, here we are. So, Yvonne, tell us what's been going on in San Francisco.
What's been going on in San Francisco? Well, there's a lot of pissed off people, is what I could... There's a lot of pissed off people, apparently, that are angry at basically Silicon Valley technology people coming in and moving out of the valley and heading to frickin' San Francisco.
Right.
And they are getting pissed off because they're driving up the price of housing.
Way up.
They're taking over, they're using buses to transport themselves. They basically have got a lot of money and are throwing it around. And there's just a lot of people pissed off about it. I mean, for various reasons. I was reading a very lengthy article today that was on TechCrunch regarding this. Okay. And I mean, the thing is that, I worked for HP for a very long time, so I went out there, you know, very often. You know, the people in Silicon Valley really didn't venture that much into San Francisco back then. Okay. Right. This has been something now where the cities all of a sudden have started having a lot more attractiveness, and over the last, I don't know, more than a decade, all of a sudden a lot of people have been wanting to live near the city. And the city closest is San Francisco.
And they're both people in traditional Silicon Valley companies that are commuting back to the Valley, and they're also tech companies moving into San Francisco itself.
Right. I mean, the commute, let me tell you something. I mean, I've done that commute from San Francisco to Silicon Valley. Right? It's hell.
Yeah.
I did it.
This again is where those company buses come in.
Yeah.
Instead of somebody doing the commute, you get on the nice comfy bus with your Wi-Fi and your air conditioning, and you kick back while the bus deals with traffic.
Yeah. I mean, the commute is like, I mean, I remember from downtown San Francisco to Palo Alto, where HP's headquarters was about an hour and a half. Okay. All right. It was miserable. It could take up to two. Okay.
Right.
And it's something that if there was
when
no traffic...
When it's really bad here, my commute into Seattle has gone over too. I mean, it's rare, but it's happened, and oh my God, that sucks.
No, it's miserable. So that's why a lot of these buses are out there. I mean, one of the reasons they're putting the buses, I mean, it's a combination of like comfort for the people traveling. It's eco-friendly to put the buses and so forth.
And you put the Wi-Fi on it so they can actually work while they're on the bus.
Exactly. We're on their way back and forth. But a lot of people in San Francisco that have been residents there for a very long time see this as a sign of all these money-grubbing scumbags that are coming into town and taking away our shit. And, one of the bigger problems that somebody highlighted today, the reason why the price of housing in the San Francisco and the Bay Area is going up is because many years ago, quite a lot of restrictions were put on people, rentals. Price controls were put in, so people that were in rentals couldn't be pushed out. And then quite a lot of restrictions regarding construction of new housing. And, there's a number of people in San Francisco that are protesting against the tech companies that they don't want to understand that it is a problem of supply and demand. They showed a chart that San Francisco has had one of the highest increases in housing prices anywhere in the world, basically because they have the lowest amount of new housing that's coming online compared to anywhere in the world.
You're talking a city with defined limits, right? And not just the metropolitan area. So there's a limited.
No. I'm talking about the metro area itself as well, because that's been one of the big problems too. Santa Clara County and all the towns around have been oh yeah, open new business is great, but then they've been like refusing permits to build apartments, condos, etc., whatever. So you've got an entire metro area that, for whatever the hell damn reason, for many reasons, because of convoluted rules or regulations, is limiting how much new housing you can put on the market. And basically, a lot of people coming in that want to be there, and they're driving the price of the stuff through the hill. Listen, the price of Silicon Valley real estate was high in the 90s, for God's sakes. This is not a new phenomenon. I had a friend of mine who had a house over there. I remember, like, in the late 90s, a 1,700 square foot house. Okay, all right, not talking big, that he bought for, I don't know, less than $200,000. He told me in the 80s. Yeah, it was worth over $1 million in the late 90s. Mm-hmm. Okay, and it didn't drop much after the tech implosion in 2000 because a lot of other companies took up the slack. So the price of housing over there has been bad all along. I remember I can't remember you were like, oh my God, how long ago you were considering a job over there.
Oh yeah, I don't know when that was either, like 97 or 98, it must have been. Something like that. Yeah,
and I remember that we were looking at the price. You know, you and I were looking at the price of rental places over there in the valley, and they were outrageous. This was in the late 90s, and I remember that it was over $2,000 a month to get a rental. Okay,
to get a nice rental.
To get a nice rental, I had a friend of mine who I remember who was a coworker of mine at HB that lived out there, and he had a one. This was I can't remember. Was it a one bedroom? Well, I remember it was less than 700 square. It was like 700 square feet rental, and he was paying $2,000 a month. Okay, right in the late 90s. Okay, for this, it was horrible. Okay, all right. This thing was horrible, for God's sakes. Yeah. I remember going to visit his place, and I was like, good God almighty, this thing is horrible. And it was like, I mean, horrible and expensive. So you've got a situation where this is going on, and you've got a lot of people that basically, I think that the tech companies and the guys have become easy targets for the protests because they generate a lot of publicity. I remember the one that was hilarious was this with, you know, and these people are, I think you've got a combination. The thing is that the groups obviously are very heterogeneous. This is not all the same people protesting. You've got some guys that, yeah, they're protesting because you know, they're upset about the price of housing. I get that. They want more fair, more equity, etc. There's some people that are just nutcases. I mean, there's this one guy that went to the house of a Google executive and basically posted a note in his front door calling him a parasite.
Oh, Kevin
and
Rose. That was Kevin Rose.
Yeah, Kevin Rose. And then they demanded that Google give them $3 billion because they're going to solve all the problems in the world.
Yeah, I was going to ask, what the hell do they want?
Do they want $3 billion? Yes.
I want $3 billion.
I want $3 billion, too. So I was like, oh, so basically you're calling him an asshole, but you're saying because he's a rich asshole, but you know what? Make me rich and I'll do the right thing. And I'm like, really?
That was obviously one case, but more generally, do they want things like rent controls or restrictions on who can come? What do they really want here?
Sure. I mean, a lot of that they're trying to stop evictions. They're trying to stop people from areas from being redeveloped, et cetera, and so forth. But I think that the problem is that the things that they're asking for, to a certain extent, to most extent, are just making this worse, and that's the problem. You know, you're not going to get, you know, prices of housing to go down if you put more restrictions on building stuff. The only way to make the prices go down is for them to be more supply of housing, and most of the guys that are protesting are really stopping this from happening. And the rules put in place, that all they're doing is making it far more difficult to put more housing. So, I don't know. I mean, it's yeah. So it's just it seems like I don't see how they can fix this situation unless they get together and they agree on something different. They had a chart in the article I was reading today that showed home prices and new construction in certain tech hubs. Okay, so for example, they showed Seattle, Washington. Okay, for example, Seattle, Washington has a median price per square foot of slightly under $200 per around $200 per square foot. But they've got construction permits, for example, about you know they've got about over two and a half times as many construction permits going right now for new housing against San Francisco. San Francisco having the lowest of any of the tech hubs has a price per square foot of close to $600 per square foot. I mean, three times Seattle. For example, Austin, Texas. Austin, Texas has the one of the cheapest pricing per square foot. And guess what? They've got the most construction permits out there to build new housing. And they've got the cheapest price per square foot. I mean, and there's a direct relationship to it. I mean, it's like, guys, you need more houses. You need to go out and work at how the hell you get more supply, more of this in an easier way. And that's the only way you're going to solve the damn problem. And if everybody just goes and like just says, no, I don't want them here. I don't want them here. They just keep driving the price. I mean, the problem is you get all these people that are filthy rich. I mean, yeah, they keep driving the price per square foot up. I mean, what else are they going to do if they want to live there? There's nothing else you can do.
Yeah,
you can't build anything.
You buy out whoever was there before at whatever price that takes.
Exactly.
And that very nature of that means it goes up, up, up.
Up, up, up. Up, 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 up. Through the roof. So, I mean, I think a lot, but I will tell you this. I think I understand the protest from the economic side because of that.
Now, they're also talking about ruining the culture.
I think that's just a bunch of bullshit. I think these are just a lot of people who are just I mean, I know you've got a combination of assholes coming together at the same time. You got a whole bunch of rich tech assholes versus a whole bunch of snob, oh, my culture's cool assholes at the same time.
Bunch of hippies.
It's just, yeah. It's just, you know, it's just a match not made in heaven. I don't know. I mean, a lot of these guys are just protesting because they just don't like the other guys.
So where does it go? Does it all blow up or does it all just die down again after a few months?
You know, there's a lot of people trying to do something, but I don't know. I don't know if they reached a breaking point yet where people are actually going to sit down and do something in order to try to solve it. The one thing is that one thing's for sure. Whatever solutions are to be had, it's not gonna be quick. I mean, you can't just spool up and start building thousands and thousands of housing units in 2 seconds. And prices aren't just gonna come down like that in a big crash. So, you know, I don't know. I don't see any respite anytime soon. That's for sure.
Now you mentioned other places like Austin, and obviously Seattle is another one of these tech hubs, and there are a few other places. Do you see movement of like some of the tech industry to more of these other locations? Because basically, like, hey, the valley's full.
Not yet. I mean, it, I don't. I have the answer is no, not yet. I haven't seen anything like that happen. I mean, and the data doesn't bear that out.
Do you expect it in the future was more what I was getting at.
If a lot of this stuff doesn't get resolved, I'm going to say yes. I mean, I don't see how – I don't see what else they can do. I really don't. There's a lot of places that outside – in tech that are growing, clustered around major metro areas, you know, like Seattle being one, Austin, even down here in Miami, I mean, we've had like a big spurt in like tech companies sprouting up because, you know, the big development of downtown Miami, like we were just talking about the cities and their growth. I mean, most cities had population drops down to the 80s and all of a sudden, you know, in the last 10, 15 years, population has been surging in major metro areas. And it's just Miami has been one that has taken off because downtown Miami has had massive development of housing stock in the last 15 years. And a lot of people are attracted to the weather, the city, and the culture and everything. And all of a sudden, there's been a big
hurricane.
Yeah. Well, we don't have earthquakes.
That's true.
You know.
Or mudslides.
Or mudslides. So, you know, at least a hurricane, they'll tell you in advance. You can volcanoes. Go hide. We don't have volcanoes. And we can't, and by the way, we can't get hit by a tsunami either.
Really?
Yep. Yeah. The continental shelf outside of
South Florida. Oh, is big enough Florida, to protect it. Protect,
basically, you know, yeah. Yep.
Cool.
Basically. So, good. No tsunami.
Good for you, I guess.
Yep, there you go. So,
okay, let's take a break. We'll come back with one of our last topics, and yeah, we'll see after that. Back after this. Except Skype is frozen. Hold on.
Well, I can still hear you.
I can still hear you. It still says it's recording. It just won't let me click on it and do anything with it.
We've talked about.
Hey, you, listeners, we know you have thoughts about the stuff we say here on Curmudgeon's Corner. You probably think we're completely wrong about many things. Or perhaps you want to tell us that we're geniuses. That's always great. Or perhaps you just want to suggest a topic for us to talk about. All of these things are wonderful. We love to hear from you. So talk to us. If you prefer email, just email Sam. That's me, your prime curmudgeon, at abulsme@abulsme.com. That's spelled A-B-U-L-S-M-E. Or tweet at us. I'm at abulsme, and Yvonne is at imbo. That's I-M-B-O-U. And while we may not do it every time, don't be surprised if we respond to you right here on the show during an upcoming episode. Thanks, everybody. We'll be looking for your email and tweets. So get right on that.
Okay, that worked.
That worked. And it's still not paying attention to me otherwise, but I got the last recording and I'm back.
Okay, cool.
Okay. And the Finder seems to be unhappy too, but whatever. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. My God. Okay, what else did we have,
Yvonne? Ukraine!
Oh, yeah. So, when last we spoke about this several weeks ago, we basically said we would not be surprised if Putin chopped off a few more pieces. And certainly, and I mentioned the possibility of him doing various things to destabilize the country and make it untenable. I think that's what's been going on.
And at the same time, I know that that's what he's doing because he's wanting to do that. And I mean, just, you know, what I mean by that is, you know, sometimes people have certain specific motives, like economic motives of this or that or whatever. This is just a whim because he wants it. Okay. All right.
Well, and I've heard a number of people describe it not so much as a whim, but as a visceral reaction when his guy got kicked out.
Because exactly.
He didn't really expect that. He thought that, you know, he had good and properly bought off the Ukraine.
Right.
And bought off this guy and that he was going to get what he wanted because, you know, he had put all
bought the, him off.
He had bought him off to make sure that they went his way instead of the West. And then he was honestly surprised and shocked at the public reaction that resulted in the guy getting ousted. And he's like, well, so his reaction was basically, well, okay, then fuck them.
Right. But I mean, I'm wondering, when is it that Russia will, I mean, if Russia continues this path, it's not a question of if, it's a question of when they are going to hit the financial crisis.
Okay.
Because one of the things that happened last week was that a number of Russian companies tried to issue debt and nobody wanted to buy it. All right?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody wanted to touch a single dollar of Russian corporate debt. All right? And, you know, there has been also a net massive capital outflow of Russia in an incredible accelerator rate. And, you know, Russia doesn't have unlimited resources. At what point does this really become a massive financial crisis for Russia for this, you know, stupid adventure with the Ukraine? I mean, it's not a question of if, it's a question of when. It may take months, but I mean, I don't see how they can continue to do business and spend money on this crap and all the other stuff that he's been doing, you know, indefinitely with what's been happening in the financial markets. The stock market keeps getting the shit kicked out of it. The ruble is getting the shit kicked out of it. Nobody wants to buy their government debt. Nobody wants to buy their corporate debt. I don't know. I mean, there's a breaking point. I'm not sure exactly when it is, but at some point it's going to happen. So that's the thing about this. I'm wondering how long it's going to take for Putin to realize the kind of damage that he's doing to his economy. And so far, he hasn't cared. I mean, he keeps doing like you mentioned.
Well, and the question is also, of course, you know, right now he's very popular and these acts are very popular. What he's doing in the Ukraine is very popular. So it's not just, you know, do they realize that there's a financial impact? But it's not just does Putin care? But if the idea is to generate pressure amongst the rest of the oligarchs or amongst the whole population for that matter, you have to get to the point where not only is it felt, but where they actually blame Putin as opposed to blaming the West. Because right. The place where these kinds of sanctions often break down, and you've seen this in other places where sanctions have been the tool that's used, it can have massive economic effect, but you know, people rally around the flag and say we're being assaulted by the rest of the world.
Yeah, and that's, you know, all good. That's all. But that's all good and great in terms of public opinion. But what, you know, the problem is with that is that doesn't pay the bills.
Mm.
I mean, you know, great. So okay, beautiful. It's just, you know, so what? I mean, it still doesn't pay the damn bills.
Well, in this context, though, the only bills that matter are foreign bills, right? Because you can always, you can
fix the situation. Well, they can print a lot of money, right? Yeah. But one of the things that's happened over the last 10 years about the Russian economy, it's become extremely dependent on imports.
Yeah,
it's become extremely dependent on exporting commodities and importing everything else. So, okay, great. I mean, if your currency keeps dropping, that means you have to keep printing more of this shit. I mean, and people don't want to take enough of them, so you're causing massive inflation. You're causing a lot of real pain in anybody who's saving money in your damn currency. You know, anybody who's a pensioner, anybody who's like, you know, who's getting anything from the government. I mean, I'm sure that's the problem.
Now, of course, Russia, of all places, has shown that they can endure that kind of stuff for decades.
Yeah, well,
I mean, the economy during the Soviet days wasn't exactly awesome.
That's true, but my point about that is it didn't make the people happy.
It did not make the people happy, but it took many decades before that situation resulted in.
The thing about it is that it certainly is not going to enable because Russia, like I said, has become so dependent on imports for other stuff. Okay, great. They want to be pushing around other countries, doing war, doing this, doing that. How the hell you do it if now you're buying your fucking weapons from the French and now you can't afford it to anymore? Because it currently is worth shit.
You go back to making your own.
Oh, it's just they're going to flip on a switch and they're going to start making them just like tomorrow.
Well, not tomorrow, but I mean, that kind of effort has been, you know, ramp up can be done really fast if you have a dedicated policy towards that and you have, you force people to do it.
If you go back to what, listen, the Russians are now used to having a whole bunch of shit that they didn't have before. Yep. Okay. All right.
Your basic argument is, you know, hey, in the past, in the Soviet days, people were miserable, but hey, they'd always been miserable. Now they've had a glimpse of what it could be to be better than that. And so they're not going to want to go back.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, would you want to? Would you want to make lines for toilet paper when you haven't had to do that in 20 years?
No.
Yeah.
I can't say that I would. No.
Yeah. I mean, because that's the shit that we're talking about. We're talking about 20 years ago, these people had to make a line for fucking toilet paper. Okay? All right? Now you can go buy toilet paper. Now you want to go back to those days? I mean, I don't, you know.
Right.
That's what I'm talking about. I mean, I don't know. So, I put it this way. I looked at since 2008, the Russian ruble has devaluated against the dollar. It was a 20. It used to take $1 bought only 23 rubles before the financial crisis in 2008. Okay, now 1 ruble will buy 36 rubles. So that's about, the heck is that? 50% devaluation, about around that. Yep, that's 23.
It's arithmetic.
Yeah, 50% devaluation. Yes. That's pretty steep. I'll tell you what. It's been dropping consistently all year. I mean, I don't know. That's going to spur inflation. That's going to spur shortages of things. I mean, you've got this massive capital flight. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's just not sustainable.
Right. The question is, do you actually need to sustain it for a long time? Or if Putin is smart about this, can he engage in basically short-term destabilizing actions in Ukraine that, first of all, destabilize these eastern areas and perhaps he grabs some of those right off the bat, but then destabilize the rest of the country? And, you know, the question is, what does Putin think his end state is here? Does he think his end state is to chop off a few more pieces of Ukraine and then be happy? Or is his end state to overthrow the current Ukrainian government and put back in a puppet state?
Okay, but this is the question. Are we going to go just because the, say, we don't get, say Putin doesn't sit down with, you know, at least say, not to say the president, but say with Angela Merkel, okay, mm-hmm. at least, all right, and come to some kind of an agreement on how to resolve the situation. Are we just going to go back to business as usual with Russia after this? I guess that's the key question. And if we don't...
So I think what Putin's gamble here is that he can, over a short period of time, accomplish his goals, whatever they are, whether they're to overthrow the whole Ukrainian government and put something in there, or just to chop off a few more pieces. And basically, the West has a short memory. And yeah, maybe they'll put some things in place for 6 months, maybe a year. But then eventually, you know, they're going to want to do business. And those whatever sanctions are in place are going to be leaky.
Ask the Iranians if we have short memories, I guess is what he should ask.
Yeah, we're still holding a grudge for something that happened in the 70s.
Exactly.
I mean, basically, forget all this nuclear stuff. It's really about what happened in the 70s.
Yeah. What about Cuba?
Yeah.
Yeah. We don't really have that short of memories with this shit. Okay? I mean, that's my thing.
But how about Europe? Does Europe have a shorter memory?
I think Europe is more concerned than we are about this. Mm-hmm. I really think that they can't.
It seems like they weren't at first, but once he started like taking over shit, they're like, oh crap.
Oh fuck. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, because I think you saw a dramatic change in the attitude of the Europeans once Russia annexed Crimea.
Yeah.
It was like overnight, like you got at first they were like, you know, we'll figure this out, we'll deal with this, we're done. Sanctions, that's a little harsh. And then after that happened, they're like, oh yeah.
Oh fuck it. Yeah, we gotta do something.
Because you know, because they have memories of, you know, Soviet expansionism.
Yes.
And Czechoslovakia during the Prague Spring, and and of course memories of World War II and everything as well. And so they're very, very paranoid about the idea that borders might be malleable.
Yes,
and they do, because that scares the hell out of them. Because if you can change who owns Crimea, why can't you change who owns any other piece of real estate on the continent?
Damn straight. So I don't know. I don't think I really, unless Putin all of a sudden does some major back down, I don't think that anybody's gonna let the pressure, you know, take the pressure off Russia. And I
don't see him backing down either.
I don't see him backing down
like,
either.
I keep seeing the developments each week, and I'm like, you know, there have been there have been deaths. There have been people shot. There have been actions happening. And I like every week I'm like, I can't believe this hasn't blown up into a full scale conflict yet. It's right on the edge.
Yeah.
I know. It's like, so far everybody's for the most part kept their calm. The Russians have been doing all kinds of provocative actions. Oh, I'm sorry. Not the Russians, the pro-Russian people in these areas that just happen to be highly trained special forces people.
Yeah, exactly.
It's been amazing to me that it's managed to simmer at this level, but it's still such a, at any moment it could explode completely. We're still right on that edge. And it's the kind of thing where it's not necessarily a decision made at the top that says, okay, we're going to have a conflict now, although it certainly could happen that way too. And, you know, Putin could give the order to go ahead and invade the rest of Ukraine at any moment. But no, it's also the low-level soldiers on the ground could get scared and start shooting.
Yes.
And then it escalates from there.
Yep. So far, they haven't done that. A number of people have remarked about the discipline that the troops have had regarding that. But
I should say, both Ukrainian and Russian troops.
Right, both of them.
Yeah. So, although the Russians deny being there at all, but
right,
you know, we all right. know.
Yeah. It's not them. It's you know, yeah. These are really very highly trained social workers.
They were farmers.
They just came from the farm, straight up. Yep, no training whatsoever. Absolutely.
Anyway, that's that.
That's pretty much that.
So, do you want to do another segment, or do you want to call it quits? We still have two more things on our list. I think.
I know we do. And all of a sudden, I can't find my list.
Well, and I know exactly where my list is, but it's hidden behind a window that's not moving.
Yeah, but I'm like, I haven't gotten up from my desk. How the hell did I make the list disappear? Oh, there it is. Okay, never mind. I think, we only have, like, really one thing on the list, but you know what? It's not really, I mean, you're probably not excited, but we could talk, we go.
No, what is it? What is it? What is it?
Well, it was regarding Google's earning miss, but the only important, the only big thing about that I wanted to mention about it. The headline's quite simple. Revenue only inched up like 3%. Profits were, you know, profits were only up 3%. Revenue was up like 20%. But the big thing about it, the reason why profits were like eh, is because even though ad growth went up substantially, the rates for ads went down like by 15-20%. And they're blaming that on a transition to mobile because people aren't willing to pay as much for mobile clicks as much as they are for desktop clicks. So, it's just, I guess the only thing to mention about this is that I kept saying is, like, you know, everybody kept bidding up Google's shares for the last couple of months, and now all of a sudden they've had a significant sell-off the last couple of months, and I kept saying, okay, you know, everybody keeps bidding them up, and I don't see any growth, and they're doing all this other crap, which is not producing any profit, and now you've got a massive drop in paid, you know, how much people are willing to pay for clicks, and profits are not growing the way that people thought.
Let me ask a question, because I tweeted earlier today an article on Vox about Google and how it's structured, and how a number of other companies, Facebook and some others, are doing something similar. But basically, how Google has been structuring things from the beginning and reinforced it with some changes made in the last couple months to guarantee that the two founders have a majority interest in the company and will stay of the voting interest in the company.
Of the voting interest.
That basically assuring that as long as. Brin and what's the other guy's name?
Larry Page.
Larry Page and Sergey Brin, as long as they agree together, they have 54% of the vote or something like that. And the way they're issuing new shares, they just added a new Class C share with no voting rights whatsoever. They're doing it in such a way to guarantee they maintain that monopoly, and such that essentially Wall Street can, you know, think whatever they think about what they're doing, they can decide what to do anyway.
The problem is with companies that have those structures generally is that people aren't willing to pay a big premium, and usually it causes the share price to drop. Because if I'm going to buy stock in something where I can't vote, I cannot vote on the ownership stake, then I have less incentive to hold that stock. Historically, that's been the case. Microsoft didn't have an ownership structure like that.
Nope.
Neither did Apple.
But why in that sense, other than
neither did HP,
other than the personal wealth of the founders, which is of course a concern.
It's all about control.
It's all about control. Why would they care if the price drops 50%? We still got our. We can still do what we're doing. We're still making the same revenue. We're still have the same costs. The share price doesn't really matter, except when you issue new shares.
Well, their wealth is really tied to this stock.
I said other than you can look at these two guys and say, you know, they're billionaires. They'd still be billionaires if it dropped 80%. So why do they care?
Well, I guess if they don't care about how much money they got and they just care about that,
because if they want to just dedicate the entire company to making self-driving cars and putting the internet on blimps, they can do it.
Sure, they can do it, and it will drive the stock price into the shitter, I guess. And if they don't care about the stock price, then, you know, I guess they're better than me, I guess. I don't know what to say. I mean, yeah, sure, you can do that.
And yeah. You know, Zuckerberg's got the same kind of deal with Facebook. You know,
yep.
Except it's just him instead of being two people, so he can do whatever the fuck he wants. And he's made clear on a number of occasions, basically, yeah, I structured this way. I'm going to keep it this way. It's my company. I'm going to do whatever the hell I want to with it.
I know, but eventually, you know, like I said, I mean, this is typically this type of ownership structure lends itself to people not wanting to pay as much money for the stock, especially if the owners start acting quite eccentric.
And again, my point with this is, like, you know, the company makes the money off the stock in the initial offering and any subsequent offerings. But if you've made your initial offering, you've got your billions, whatever, then if you don't intend to do any additional stock offerings, then the price is irrelevant.
But that's a company, okay?
Right.
Not necessarily the owners of the company that kept a massive stake in it. So if you own 30% of the stock, the only way that you're going to make money is if the stock goes up.
Or to And more to the point, you have to sell that stock at some point or start paying yourself a dividend.
Exactly. That's the only way. So you got to be fucking making money and making people convince them that that your stock is going up. So, you know, otherwise, then, you know, you're not going to be sitting pretty forever.
And again, though, when you have, you know, when you have full founder control, the founders could decide that, hey, I've got enough money and other things right now that meet all of my needs for the rest of my life. I don't care if I send this stock to zero. I'm going to do interesting things with the company until it's gone.
Okay, look.
I'm not suggesting, by the way, that either a Zuckerberg or
Google is crazy enough to maybe do something like that, because, I mean, I've never seen anybody like so disinterested in like trying to run a business like the way it should be more than Google. I
look at this, if the end result of this is I get my damn self-driving car, which would meet my issue for the bus, because if I had a self-driving car, I would never even think about the bus. I'd get on my self-driving car, I'd tell it to go to work, and I'd lie down, and I'd watch TV, and I'd read, and I'd sleep, and it would wake me up when I'm at work.
And if it could be powered by solar energy in your house, it'd be even better.
There you go.
Or the Mr. Fusion. Actually, I don't know. I started making. I will tell you this on a separate note before we end this, because we're at the end of this rope.
Yeah.
I started making calculations of how much it would cost in order to completely turn our condo solar.
Yeah.
Electric. Okay. Yeah. I gotta say that I think actually, but let me tell you something. The price of this stuff has been going down so much that I think I would say that within the next 3 or 4 years, it would be crazy not to do it.
Hmm. Okay.
Okay.
And of course, this is with you in Miami. The equation changes depending on the weather in your area, how much sunlight you get, all kinds of other factors.
Sure. Yes. But here in Florida, I mean, I would say that within the next 10 years, if you're a homeowner and you're not considering going fully solar, you're out of your mind.
That'll be an interesting change when that starts becoming widespread. And what you mean by going fully solar is produce enough electricity to
that you need
no, to be
that
you fully self-sufficient on
absolutely
electricity.
Yes, that you basically do not need the utility, period.
Yeah,
that I was just doing the calculations. I'm like, right now, I think it would cost for about 1,700 square foot house, it would cost about $18,000. A typical house of that size over here spends about $200 a month on electric. So 17,000 divided by $200, you're talking about 85 months payback, which is not that long.
Right.
But the thing is that I think the price is going to drop in half, at least with it, which makes it that if you go $9,000. Geez, stupid investment. You do $200 a month. You're talking to take not even 4 years to get your payback. I mean, it would be a no-brainer to do it.
And of course, part of the equation is too that in a number of areas that it's gone there, it's not just potentially going off the grid. It's producing an excess that you can sell back.
Oh well, but that's got other issues, because I saw also that the price that FPL whoever the utility is to pay is too cheap. I mean, they're like looking at paying only like 3 cents a kilowatt hour.
Of course they don't want to. They don't want to do that. But you got to look at it. If you've got an excess, whatever.
I got more than that. Zero. I mean, I agree. So I don't know, I've got that project at the top of my head. I would like before the end of this decade is my commitment. I want to try to go completely to my eco-friendly boost. I want to go full solar. Fuck
you
it.
You know, here in the Pacific Northwest, I don't think I'm going to be doing that anytime soon.
Well, here's the thing about you guys. I looked at how many kilowatt hours of electricity you guys consume on average. You guys, I mean, we spend a lot more because
of air conditioning.
Yeah.
Again, it's the air conditioning that's the real killer.
Right.
So you guys actually, yeah, you could probably for the size, you don't need as much to generate as much electricity.
No, we don't need to generate as much, but there is an issue of storage because we don't have the fairly reliable sunlight. So you have to be able to deal with the fact that you have sunny days and then you can have weeks of overcast, cloudy.
What you can do, which is possible, is that you have a balance where you. I mean, let's face it. You do set it up that it can go to the grid if you don't have enough.
No. I know that there's all kinds of stuff that can be done. I'm just saying that, your calculations are it's going to be worth your while in a couple years. Here, I'm not sure that equation is there yet to make it that clear.
Like, but I think that before the end of the decade, it will be for almost everybody.
There's certainly people that have them. I mean, I can drive around and I'll occasionally see solar panels on houses, but it's clearly a supplemental thing. But yeah, the technology is improving, not just the cheapness, but I mentioned storage, that kind of stuff's improving. Also dynamic systems that automatically reorient themselves to catch the light as the sun moves and all kinds of other stuff there. And not to mention other, there are all kinds of, the alternative energy space in general is a very interesting space. There are all kinds of things that, as the balance between fossil fuels and other things changes, as the price of oil goes up, because of tar sands and stuff, we've had a little bit of a retrenchment. But like, eventually, it's a non-renewable resource. It's inevitable. It's just a question of time until you start running out of it. All of these other alternatives are out there and possible. You've got, things like solar and wind and hydro and nuclear. I was reading an article earlier today about continued research on fusion, which if anybody ever actually figures that stuff out, it'll revolutionize everything. There's lots of interesting work being done there. And the theme on all of these for decades now has been, it's been possible, but it hasn't been cost competitive
cost competitive
with just burning stuff because of A, the fossil fuels were so damn cheap, and B, the technology for all these other things was so expensive. Well, the fossil fuels have been getting more expensive. These technologies have been getting cheaper. They're going to meet.
Right. All right. We're done.
Are we good? Okay.
Yeah,
so
we got it.
Yeah. Yep. So thanks everybody for joining us. Well, you know how to contact us. I don't know.
Yeah. The phone, the thing.
No, yeah. The phone. Are you giving out your phone number?
Yeah. Sure. Everybody calls me.
Yeah. It's really easy to find my phone number if you want it to. I mean, it's not like I
see. Yeah. I'm sure you can find mine in 2 seconds.
Yeah, exactly. So, but anyway, you know the ways to contact us. We like hearing from you. And, everybody have a good week. And we'll talk to you next time. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Okay. You have to hang up because,
Oh, right.